Listen to All the Books, a weekly show of recommendations and enthusiasm regarding the week's new book releases. This is episode 313, and today we are talking about books being released on June 1st, 2021, and more. I'm Liberty Hardy, here with Danica Ellis, and we're coming to you from bookriot.com. Danica, hello!
Hello!
How's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very excited about warm weather. I'm very excited about all the books that there are to read.
There's so many books today. There's too many for one day, really. We're hogging all of the good books today.
Yeah, it's absolutely wild how many amazing books are out today. But that's exciting. Also, I realized we were talking earlier about like how many books were out today. We couldn't believe it. But I realized that it was kind of the default date for the late fall books that got the big push at the end of last year. So that's also why there's so many books today. I am super excited about everything we're going to talk about today. Also, I don't know if you noticed, Danica, but I swapped us around. You're going to kick it off today.
Oh, okay. I can do that.
I'm very sneaky. but let's see. Do I have anything else exciting to talk about? I watched the Friends reunion. I cried a lot.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
It was good.
I think Friends is an okay show, but I will watch like a cast reunion and I will watch a last episode of a TV show that I haven't even watched because it always makes me cry. I always cry like, I don't know why, but it's this thing that I do. I'm like, these people work together for so long and they're really friends and they love each other. And then like, I cry. It's true. And then I watch like the Friends reunion and they cry a whole bunch on there, you know, because they're seeing each other at once, like the first time in 17 years. And I was just like, they love each other so much. It's true that. You know what's a really good one to watch if you want to watch like a last episode of something that will make you cry is The Golden Girls.
Oh, that's good to know.
They're like saying goodbye to Dorothy. She's moving away. But then when she goes out the door, she comes around in the back door of their house. And that was unscripted and they weren't expecting her. And so they all start crying and like hug her again.
Oh,
it's amazing. I did read a book about the Golden Girls. Yes. So that's what I've been watching. That and Mare of Easttown, which is almost over. This weekend is the last episode, I do believe. Unless Memorial Day weekend is messing it up somehow, but I don't think so. I think that like people would crash the internet if Mare of Easttown's last episode wasn't on this weekend. What about you? Are you watching anything good?
What am I watching? I finished watching Ted Lasso for the third time.
Yay.
Still love it. We're watching through Superstore again too.
I'm so in love with Coach Bear.
Yeah.
Like, for the very first time, I have not looked up the actor who plays him because I don't want to know anything about him because I just want Coach Beard to be real. I'm so in love with him.
That's fair.
Yeah, it's so great. And Superstore, you said.
Yeah, I love Superstore. It's just fun.
Yeah.
I really want to just watch comedies right now. That's my headspace.
Yeah. I love Mark McKinney, who's on Superstore. Because I'm a big Kids in the Hall fan, although it has been many years since I've watched it, and I probably would just go, the whole time. I'm sure it's slightly problematic.
Yeah, some things it's good not to revisit. Yeah. Just let them stay.
But I did love that show when I was in high school. Oh, I'm so old.
The other exciting thing is that it's the first day of Pride today, at least in the U.S. We actually have Pride in July here, so I get to have my online Pride in June and then just smoothly go into real-life Pride in July. So 2 months of Pride. It's great.
That's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And there being Canada, for people at home who don't know where you are.
Yeah, we have it in July in like the Vancouver area, but it's different in different parts of Canada too.
Oh.
When the Pride Parade is.
Like,
some people have
then.
It in August. Yeah.
Strange.
I'm not really sure why, but.
Well, all right. People just do what they want. That's fine. So, speaking of doing what we want, it's time for a sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by TorBooks. So if you are a fan of epic fantasy, if you're a fan of Scott Lynch and or Joe Abercrombie, but you want something a little different, you want a hero who's like a bit of a mess, then The Silver Blood Promise by James Logan is for you. In it, Academy dropout / disgraced noble heir Lacan Cordova's life is in shambles. All he's got going for him is, one, he is a card sharp of considerable skill, and two, a lot of, maybe potentially a little too much, wine. Those are, you know, those are the positives. So when the bizarre murder of his father robs him of even the off chance of redemption, Lacan decides to make amends another way. He's going to unravel the mystery behind the killing, even if it takes him to the underbelly of Sophrona, a city of danger, secrets, and merchant princes. Finding the truth is one thing. Finding the truth and staying alive is like a whole other thing. So make sure to check out The Silver Blood Promise by James Logan on sale May 7th. And thanks again to TorBooks for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Bloom Books. Taming Seven is an epic and unforgettable love story in the international best-selling and TikTok phenomenon The Boys of Tommen series from Chloe Walsh. So Tommen's cheekiest lad, Jared Gipsy Gibson, has always been a comedian, but inside he is haunted by events of the past and he uses humor to cope, hiding his true self from the world. Then you have Claire Biggs, who is the epitome of sunshine. She's always loved Gibsy, her brother's friend and her favorite neighbor. She also has always seen a side to him that no one else seems to notice, and she becomes determined to tame her wild at heart childhood best friend. So the Boys of Tommen series is an internationally best-selling YA romance series that has taken TikTok by storm. It's perfect for readers looking for new adult / crossover romance, dual point of views, friends to lovers, marathon worthy TikTok books, and angsty tearjerkers. Taming Seven is published today and it's the fifth book in the series, so make sure to check it out. And thanks again to Bloom Books for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, and now, like I said, I switched us around, so you are up.
Okay, so again, there were so many books out today, I had to narrow it down somehow, and because it's the first day of Pride, I went with all queer books. So my first book is One Last Stop by Casey McQuiston. I have to start by admitting that I never read Red, White, and Royal Blue. I know everyone and their sister raves about that book, but as you might have guessed at this point, I tend to center women in my reading. And also, at a certain point, the hype becomes overwhelming. So when I picked up One Last Stop, despite the author's reputation, I was fully ready not to like it in some sort of defiant stubbornness. Instead, I am here to tell you that this author has completely earned the hype. This is the first read in a long time that I've really gotten immersed in it. It's the kind of book where you have to shake your head when you surface because you have forgotten that the real world exists or that time is passing. This is about August, a 20-something who has recently moved to New York with no plan other than switching into a new school. She's been doing this for years, switching schools, majors, and cities without ever fully unpacking or settling down. Growing up, it was just her and her mother against a hostile world. Her mother's brother went missing in the 70s, and her mother made it her life's mission to find out what happened to him. August's first word was case. She was raised on a diet of true crime and survival strategies. She always carries a pocket knife, and she never goes to a second location. At the beginning of One Last Stop, August is looking for a cheap apartment in Brooklyn, so obviously she doesn't have a lot of options. She decides to move in with three weirdos despite her misgivings. One is a psychic, and another is building a sculpture with frog bones. I was hooked from the first page where the roommate notice reads, in part, "Must be queer and trans friendly. Must not be afraid of fire or dogs. No Libras, we already have one." Of course, she ends up becoming fast friends with them. I love the quirkiness of these characters that never becomes over the top or too cutesy. And as for representation, August is white and bisexual, and there are significant POC, queer, and trans side characters. But this is a romance, so let's get to the heart of it. August is on her way to the first day of class when she spills coffee on her shirt on the Q train. A cute Chinese-American butch, Jane, smiles at her and gives her a scarf, and August is immediately smitten. Who wouldn't be? One of my favorite parts of this book is August daydreaming about Jane assembling a bed frame. If fantasizing about cute butches putting together furniture isn't sapphic culture, I don't know what is. There's just one problem. Jane is stuck on the subway and has been since the 70s. Now August has to work a new case to try to figure out how to save her crush stuck in time. even if it means she'll never see her again. All of the reviews I've seen for this book talk about how cute and delightful it is, which is fair, but it's also got some depth to it. August feels lost and isolated. It's the story of her beginning to make connections and put down roots, and maybe lay the knife to the side sometimes. There are family secrets, betrayals, and tragedies. While this is a love letter to New York, it's also a celebration of queerness, found family, and community. We get to see what Jane's experience was like growing up in the 70s as a butch punk Asian lesbian. The Stonewall riots were not history for her. It explores queer history in New York and uplifts what queerness looks like there now, including some very memorable drag nights. It's also sexy and romantic. August and Jane have an almost supernatural connection. Jane has forgotten most of her life, and together they try to regain her memories, usually through recreating elements of her past. They have great banter. In fact, the quippy dialogue is a strength in this novel overall. But even if they can find a way to reverse this situation, will Jane stay here or get pulled back to her time? And which does she want? They have undeniable chemistry, and there are some seriously steamy scenes, so content warning for semi-public sex. I am fully on board the Casey McQuiston train, puns, and I highly recommend you come along. This is one I look forward to rereading. Believe the hype. And that's One Last Stop by Casey McQuiston.
I love that book.
It's so good.
And I think that I've talked about this 500 million times in my newsletter, but I'm going to say it again. There's a thing at the very beginning when she goes to look at the apartment. And McQuiston says something like, the refrigerator made a noise like a skeleton swallowing a bag of quarters. And that was such a funny, vivid image to me that I think about it all the time. I'm like, that's a very loud noise. It's like a skeleton swallowing a bag of quarters. And it just made me laugh for days. I'm not over it still. I loved that. It's a really fun book. So now I'm going to completely change the tone of the show and talk about this incredibly powerful memoir. It's called Somebody's Daughter, a memoir by Ashley C. Ford. It is just this gorgeously written, heart-squeezing story. And I want to give content warnings up front. It does include detailed mentions of child abuse and sexual assault on the page, chemical use and abuse, racism, mental illness, loss of a child, illness, and loss of a grandparent. Ford grew up with her mother and her siblings, and sometimes her grandmother. She knew that her father was in jail, and occasionally she would write to him, and she saw him a couple times, but for the most part, he was not a part of her life. And he would send her letters, but she did not often make contact with him. And she talks about her life story so far, from her very early years, which she doesn't really remember. She doesn't remember much about her father. She just always remembers her mother being there. And then when her brother was born, a few years after she was born, she was very protective of her brother. Her mother worked very hard, but her mother was also often physically abusive. There are these very matter-of-fact descriptions of her mother's abuse on the page that are just horrifying and heartbreaking. And like I said, her father went to jail when she was very young. Her mother got a new boyfriend. I think she's like 7 or 8. So she was sent to live with her grandfather for a while, away from her mother and her brother. And it was very different for her. All of a sudden, you know, no one was hitting her and she missed her brother, but she learned a lot about her family and a little bit more about like what life was like for her mother growing up and also a little bit more about her father being in jail. And then when she went back to live with her mother and brother, she became more of a fighter. She started standing up to bullies and to her mother, which, you know, didn't go well for her most times, but she still became quite a fighter. And then when she was 10 or 11, she matured quickly for her age and started getting unwanted male attention. She had her first boyfriend. And then as a young teen, she was sexually assaulted, which I mentioned earlier, she talks about on the page. And it's very sad. And she talks about, you know, what this was like for her. Just, you know, like I said, it's so amazing how beautiful she can make this story, because, you know, it's so sad. I know you're listening to me talk about it going, oh, that's horrifying and sad. And she became depressed when she was a teenager. She became depressed and she felt that she was unworthy of love and that there was something wrong with her and that things seemed to be so easy for other people. And one thing that she kept remembering is that she was her father's daughter. He would send her letters and be like, you know, you're the best girl and you're my favorite and, you know, you're amazing and everything you do is amazing, you know, and it was so different than the world that was going on around her. You know, this is all she had in these letters. And when she grew up, she went off to college and she, you know, she loved writing and she really came into her own in college and she taught herself that she was deserving of love and safety and everything good in life. And sort of, I don't know if comes to terms with it, but, you know, discusses, you know, her mother and the way that her mother treated her. You know, it's easy for outsiders to vilify people, you know, but it's much more complicated when you are a part of that family or a part of that relationship. And it's just this extraordinarily truthful and moving memoir. The way she writes it, I really felt like it was through a child's eyes. But no, that's not saying like the writing is immature, because it's not, but more in the way that, you know, children so often, you know, aren't aware of things, you know, like adults are. Like they don't know why things are happening or they don't know what certain things mean when they're children, you know. And she talks about that, about being naive like that as a child, you know, like the things that happen that when you grow up and you go, oh, that's what that was or that's what was going on, you know. It's just, it's incredibly powerful and beautiful. And I think that everyone is going to be talking about this memoir very soon. It is called Somebody's Daughter, a memoir by Ashley C. Ford.
I've heard such good things about that one. It's definitely on my list, but I'm going to have to wait till I'm ready for it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a lot, but it, I don't know how to like put it into words that it also isn't. You know, like, it's just, I don't know if she took reader, like people reading it into account, like, and somehow her writing made it easy on people to read it. But I can't make words about it anymore. I'm done. Like, I just, it's not working anymore, but it's just amazing and everyone should read it.
Well, it reminds me of Roxane Gay and like how she wrote Hunger, where it's so brutal, the subject matter, but it's actually easy to read, but not emotionally, but it just, the way she writes makes it so that it doesn't feel like you're slogging through it. If that makes sense.
Yeah. And also, like, you're not just like watching a train wreck, you know? I mean, it's, it's Roxane Gay is a very good example of what it should be compared to. And also, like, Heavy by Kiese Layman is another good example. You know, it's a very important book, and I hope everyone reads it.
Yeah. Well, I am also going to just swing the tone wildly as my next pick. I'm actually going to talk about two queer middle grade graphic novels. The first is The Tea Dragon Tapestry by Katie O'Neill. So I actually read this back in August of 2020 because it was originally scheduled to be out in September 2020, and then it got postponed, and I'm so excited to finally be able to talk about it. This is an all-ages middle-grade comic. I have been in love with it since the first volume, The Tea Dragon Society. This is the third book in the series, and they are all these beautiful, oversized hardcover graphic novels. I cannot resist O'Neill's intricate, adorable illustration style. Every part of these books, including the end papers, have these beautiful little details. It's set in a fantasy world that gives me cottagecore vibes, and in the first book, the main character learns how to take care of tea dragons. And tea dragons are these puppy-sized dragons that grow tea leaves with magical properties. They live for hundreds of years, and they require a lot of care and gentle attention. And then eventually, you can painlessly harvest their tea leaves and brew a cup of tea that does different things depending on the tea dragon. It is ridiculously charming, so of course I jumped on getting the third volume. They are also diverse, with characters of different races and some with disabilities, including a character who uses sign language in the second volume, which you don't see a lot in comics. And because this is Katie O'Neill, there are plenty of queer characters. Usually when I'm reading a comic, I have to slow myself down from racing through it and just reading the words, but every Tea Dragon book, I have to stop and stare at every page with the vivid colors and the loving details. It also has a found family element, and there's no interpersonal conflict at all. Everyone is very kind. This is the final book in the series, so I'm not going to talk about the particulars of the plot. Not that there's a lot to spoil it, because this is much more about the kind of atmosphere of it. This is a good resolution to the series, but I am going to miss it. This one includes some Tea Dragon history at the end of the book, which was a fun bonus. It's the most cozy, calming read, which was exactly what I needed when I read it. So that's my first pick of the queer middle grade graphic novels out today, The Tea Dragon Tapestry by Katie O'Neill. And my second one is The Girl from the Sea by Molly Knox Ostertag. 5 years ago, I wrote on Book Riot about how much I loved a three-page sapphic comic with a Selkie. So when I found out that the author made that concept into a graphic novel, I was very excited to read it. It's a middle-grade sapphic graphic novel about a relationship between a human girl and a Selkie. Morgan Kwan is 15 years old and has a plan for her life. She's going to keep her head down until she graduates, and then she's going to become her authentic self. She just needs to wait it out. Her parents have just divorced, and her brother isn't taking it well. She has a close group of friends, but she doesn't feel like she can tell them her secret, that she's queer. When she was younger, she played with a Selkie. At least that's what she remembers, but she's written it off as her imagination. Then she almost drowns and is rescued by that same Selkie. The next day, Kelty appears on land in human form, something she can only do every 7 years. While they both are clearly romantically interested in each other, Morgan panics that Kelty, with her bluntness, her weird clothing, her unrestrained personality, will out her. But she doesn't want to walk away either, so she tries to balance these two lives, keeping her new relationship with Kelty a secret. I love the artwork here and the quiet exploration of Morgan's character. She has to learn that it's okay to let your life get messy. I can't wait to get a finished copy in all its glossy, full-color glory. I do want to give a clear content warning for a non-consensual outing, though it is overall a positive story. And that's The Girl from the Sea by Molly Knox Ostertag.
All right. I love the Tea Dragon stories. You can get little, like, stuffed plushy animals off the website.
I know.
Which I've always wanted to do.
Facebook has been advertising those to me nonstop, and I've come so close, but I'm trying to resist.
Yeah. Everything that I buy like that just ends up being something the cats push across the floor. So.
Well, that's a use.
I try not to buy too many things like that. Plus, if I let myself, like, my shelves would just be full. You know, I start putting them on my bookcase, and then all of a sudden it's like, I can't pull any books out without removing 15 things from in front of them. So
that's true.
My next pick is another hard one, but oh my goodness, do I love it so much. It is called Bewilderness by Karen Tucker. It is a tough read, but it's an incredible novel, and I am so in love with these characters. I want to give content warnings up front for mentions of sexual assault, drug use and abuse, and resulting death. It is about two BFFs, Irene and Luce. They meet as 19-year-olds in a restaurant in a rural town called Anklewood in North Carolina. It is a town where many of the residents are addicted to opioids, and there is a lot of poverty. And they meet when this customer tries to assault Luce, and she gets her revenge on him and takes Irene with her. And it kind of, they pull off this crime that kind of forms their bond, and they become inseparable. They're fast friends, and they become roommates. And unfortunately, the good times that they're having leads them to pills, and they become addicted to Oxy and end up spending a lot of the next few years pulling scams and stealing and using drugs. The book goes back and forth between when they meet and the present day. In the present day, they've had some legal trouble. They are clean now. They're going to meetings and trying to stay clean and leaning on one another to make that happen. But then Luce decides that she's going to move away to Florida with her boyfriend, Wilkie, and Irene is not invited to come along. And Irene is just absolutely devastated. It's very obvious that Irene, there's always the one person in the relationship who likes one more than the other. And it's very obvious that, like, Irene just worships Luce. Like, she absolutely worships her. Luce had met Wilkie while she and Irene were running a booth at a fair. And Irene was very jealous. And she was very unhappy that he kind of joined in on all their fun. And unfortunately, Wilkie also becomes addicted to drugs. It reminded me of Ruffy Thorpe, The Girls from Corona Del Mar, or Dennis Johnson's Jesus' Son. The situations can be so, so sad, but you realize these are friends who would do anything for one another. But they also, on the other hand, enable each other during the times that they are using, but then they work to help each other stay sober when they're not. And Irene and Luz are so funny and loving and real, and sometimes, like, I just, Luz was so infuriating, and I felt like I was reading about people that I knew, even though this is a novel. It's about, like, those blazing friendships you have when you're young and you just do anything for each other. But unfortunately, you know, Irene and Luz are in these unfortunate circumstances. And I do want to point out that there is nothing in this novel that makes drug use look glamorous at all. This is a very realistic look at the hold that opioids have over poverty-stricken towns and young people in America. It's, you know, kind of like drugstore cowboy kind of look at it, you know. But the writing is just astounding. And I wasn't sure how I would feel about reading this because, as I mentioned a couple of times before, my first husband was an OxyContin addict, and I didn't know how I was going to respond to this or how I would feel about reading it, but I thought that this was just an incredible novel. It's called Bewilderness, and it's by Karen Tucker.
Okay, my next book is a retelling of The Great Gatsby, and that's The Chosen and the Beautiful by Nhi Vo. When I heard that there was a queer Vietnamese-American The Great Gatsby retelling coming out, I immediately requested a review copy. I can't resist sapphic retellings, especially literary ones. And there's just one little hiccup to me reviewing this book, though. I've never actually read The Great Gatsby. I haven't even seen a movie version.
What?
I know. So I feel a little bit funny reviewing this. It's not as big in Canada. We don't really teach
that
it
makes
in school.
Sense. Lucky.
The great American novel is like not as important in Canada, I guess.
But we probably think it should be because we're American.
So I've absorbed some things from popular culture and gave the Wikipedia page a glance, but don't expect a lot of side-by-side comparisons between this and the original. But maybe Liberty can chime in, because it sounds like you know this book.
I mean, it's not my favorite. I have read it, though.
Yeah, it sounds like it's basically unheard of for people not to have read it in the U.S.
Yeah, it's a school thing.
Maybe it's unheard of here, too, and I'm just the exception. I don't know. Okay, so because I only heard the barest elevator pitch before adding this to my TBR, I wasn't even aware it was a fantasy at first. I thought Daisy and Jordan floating on the ceiling in the first chapter was a metaphor. Still, although this is a fantasy novel, the magic is in the background for most of the story. Gatsby's parties employ magical entertainment and decor, but that's not dramatically different from the lavish parties he would throw without it. The book has a languid, dreamy quality. Time passes unpredictably. We are just seeing the beginning of Nick and Jordan's relationship when she mentions how it ends. The first chapter has Jordan and Daisy gaze over her sleeping daughter, and then we see Daisy and Tom's wedding further in the book. Jordan is a fascinating main character. She is adopted from Vietnam and raised in a wealthy family. She has to learn how to navigate this world, spending most of her girlhood being treated as exotic by her friends before they grew up and abandoned her for more respectable companions. She may seem to others to be spoiled, overindulgent, a careless young woman, but she is constantly aware of not truly fitting in or having the same opportunities as the people around her. She has plenty of love affairs with men and women and even frequents a gay bar. In this version of the story, Nick and Gatsby have their own romantic relationship, which makes the love triangle or square or pentagon between Daisy, Tom, Gatsby, and Nick and Jordan even more fraught. This is a beautiful, absorbing story with an overwhelming atmosphere of magic, indulgence, and tragedy, this time with queer and Asian American angles that add depth to the story. This does so much more than what I would have hoped for from the original. I know that if I do pick up The Great Gatsby now, it will be just to better appreciate this. And that's The Chosen and the Beautiful by Nhi Vo.
All right. I forgot what I was going to say about The Great Gatsby after that. Oh, yeah. Does it have the green light? Really, the only thing I remember about The Great Gatsby is, like, that green light at the end of the dock.
That's, like, the one thing I was looking for because of what I've absorbed from popular culture. But we're seeing it from the other side. So there's no green light because we're at Daisy's with Jordan. So that's kind of a different perspective on it.
If it was a supernatural story about Gatsby, it would be cool if, like, the green light was, like, a UFO. I don't know. These ideas are just popping into my head. Let's hear from another sponsor before I have another idea.
Today's episode is brought to you by Greenleaf Book Group. No summer vacation should be without a great read, and I don't know about you, but I am partial to mysteries and thrillers for my hot month reads. It's hot girl reading summer, always over here. And from the award-winning librettist of Legally Blonde, the musical, and the screenwriter of Freaky Friday, Heather Hawk, comes the page-turning psychological thriller, The Trouble with Drowning. So when author Eden Hart floats into Tucson's Antigone Books and all her dazzling perfection to give a reading, Kat, a struggling writer, can't help but compare herself. Thankfully, Kat's life starts to take on its own Eden-like glow when her literary future takes shape and she falls madly in love with Jacob. As demons from her past begin to surface, Kat's mental health craters and this halcyon dream slips through her fingers. For the fastest-paced, slow burn you won't be able to put down, be sure to check out The Trouble with Drowning by Heather Hawk on Amazon or your retailer of choice. And thanks again to Greenleaf Book Group for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Flatiron Books, publisher of The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo. This is one I'm actually super excited about. I liked Leigh Bardugo's other adult fantasy books, and so I'm really looking forward to this one. It's set in the Spanish Golden Age during a time of high-stakes political intrigue and glittering wealth. It follows Luzia, a servant in the household of an impoverished Spanish nobleman who reveals a talent for little miracles. Her social climbing mistress demands Luzia use her gifts to win over Madrid's most powerful players, but what begins as simple amusement takes a dangerous turn. Luzia will need to use every bit of her wit and will to survive, even the help of Guillén Santángel, an immortal familiar whose own secrets could prove deadly for them both. So The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo is on sale now. And like I said, it's a must read of the season. It's perfect for anyone who loves history, a little bit of magic, a lot of danger. You can get your copy now at LeighBardugoTheFamiliar.com. And thanks again to Flatiron Books, publisher of The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo, for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, my next pick is a fantastic entry into a new historical mystery series. It's so much fun. I loved it. It is called Dead Dead Girls, a Harlem Renaissance Mystery by Nikisa Afia. And it is, like I said, the first in a new series. It's about a woman named Louise. She is a young Black woman in Harlem in 1926. And we know from the story at the beginning of the book that when she was 15 or 16, she was kidnapped along with a few other girls, and she fought her kidnapper, and they all escaped, and she's become mildly famous around her neighborhood since then. She was a hero, but she didn't love the attention, and also her father did not like the attention. She had a very strict father. He was very religious, and he wanted her to get married, like when she was a teenager. Like he had picked somebody out for her and he wanted her to get married. And instead she decides to leave her home, and her father tells her, you know, if you leave, you know, you can't come back, you can't see your siblings, you know, you're never allowed back here. And she realizes like that's something she's got to do because she's strong and independent and she doesn't want to get married, you know, when she's a young woman. So she strikes out on her own. She moves into a rooming house. She works as a showgirl for a while. And then she gets a job working at a cafe. She also loves to dance. And she goes to the speakeasy in Harlem called Zodiac, which is like the most popular speakeasy in Harlem at the time. And she dances and drinks and has a great time, because you have to remember it's like the Prohibition era right now. So you're not supposed to be drinking, but, you know, all these secret places. And she's also in love with Rosa Maria, who is another young woman who lives at the rooming house. And they have had a romantic relationship for a year or so now, in the present day when we join Louise in the book. And, she, you know, they talk sometimes about like maybe living together, you know, like would people notice if like two women moved in together, they wouldn't know that they were in a relationship. So like they should get a place together. But like strange things are happening. At the beginning of the book, she's at the Zodiac with Rosa Maria. They're dancing. And she finds out that this stranger was in the bar looking for her. And then a few days later, when she goes to work, when she shows up at work, she finds the body of a young woman laid across the steps to the cafe where she works. So the police come. They ask her if she's seen anything, you know, if they know anything. and she interacts with this one particular cop, and then she doesn't see him again until a few days later. She gets arrested because she intervenes when a police officer is harassing a young woman, and she ends up assaulting him, and she gets arrested. And so the police officer who interrogated her before about the body of the young woman tells her that he will make a deal with her, that this is actually the girl that she found is actually the third girl that was murdered this way in the last several weeks, and he wants her help finding the killer because she can go places that he can't go. She can talk to the girls in these particular clubs because all of the young women who have been murdered are women who worked in these clubs, and you know, he can't go there. So, you know, she's like, well, what if I don't agree to do this? He says, then, you know, I'm going to send you to Sing Sing. He's like, if you do this, I'll have this arrest erased from your record. But otherwise, you're going to prison. So she really feels like she doesn't have a choice, and she agrees to cooperate. But it puts her in the line of danger, of course. And maybe even she might be playing right into a killer's hands, because maybe the killer knows a little bit more about her than she realizes. It's really fun. I loved Louise. I thought she was such a fantastic character. And I loved all the descriptions of the time period and the things that people wore, like the dresses and the flappers and all the beaded costumes and everything. It was just really great. I can't wait to read the next one. I do want to give content warnings for discussions of substance abuse and use, racism, homophobia, police violence, and murder. It is Dead Dead Girls, a Harlem Renaissance Mystery by Nikisa Afia.
I love how there are two queer 1920s books out today.
Yeah.
So you can have your choice or read both. Okay. And my last choice is The Ghosts We Keep by Mason Deaver. This is a YA novel following Liam, a non-binary queer teenager whose brother Ethan recently died. We begin several months after his death, then jump back and forth through time, getting to know their relationship beforehand, as well as Liam and his parents' immediate response to his death. Liam ends up reaching out to Ethan's best friends to try to make sense of things. They are both grieving in different ways, and although they often struggle to communicate, Liam feels less alone when he's with Marcus, and he learns more about his brother than he knew in life. This is a quiet, thoughtful exploration of grief. We really sit with the emotions that Liam is going through, and I want to include content warnings for descriptions of cutting, suicidal thoughts, and a suicide attempt. Liam's usual outlet in his life is his music, which he often collaborates with his friends to create, but ever since Ethan's death, they've drifted apart, and he's had trouble connecting with his songs, which is another way Marcus ends up helping him. I don't want to say too much about this one because it is so much about emotion and grief, and it's hard to try to summarize. In addition to the main character, who is non-binary and attracted to guys, there are also several queer side characters. I do think this is a good match for fans of Adam Silvera's contemporary YA, and that's The Ghosts We Keep by Mason Deaver. But since I kept that one short, I'm going to use this time to sneak in some honorable mentions of other LGBTQ books out today that I didn't get to, but I really wanted to, and they sound great. The first is Ace of Spades by Farida Abike Imide. It's dark academia, but with queer black main characters. So this is being pitched as Gossip Girl meets Get Out. It's about two teenagers at an elite private school who become prefects and then start receiving anonymous messages from someone calling themselves aces, threatening to reveal life-altering secrets about them. There's also The Lucky List by Rachel Lippincott. Emily and her mother always considered themselves lucky, until Emily's mother dies of cancer. This follows Emily trying to complete her late mother's bucket list with a friend, until that friendship becomes something more. And that's an FFYA romance that also deals with grief. Another one I really wanted to get to that I can't believe I didn't is The Passing Playbook by Isaac Fitzsimmons. Spencer is a trans teen who is passing at his new school, but he is benched when his soccer coach finds out he has an F on his birth certificate. Now he has to decide whether to come out to fight for his rights, and this one also has an MM romance. Then there's Trouble Girls by Julia Lynn Rubin. This is a sapphic YA Thelma and Louise retelling with a Riverdale feel. Trixie and Lux are two teenage girls on a weekend getaway when they face unexpected violence that turns them into fugitives. This is a thriller that deals with misogyny, victim blaming, and the Me Too movement. There's also a literary novel, With Teeth, by Kristen Arnett. This is a character study of a queer family, a messy and deeply flawed lesbian mom, and her unsettling son. So Sammy and Monica were excited to become mothers, but Sammy finds the reality of being a stay-at-home mom very different than she expected, especially when her son, from toddler to teenager, is sullen at best and dangerous at worst. And then my last pick that I didn't get to that I am so excited about is Satisfaction Guaranteed by Carolia Stetz Waters. This is an opposites attract FF romance between two sex toy shop owners. Katie finds herself unexpectedly inheriting her aunt's sex toy shop, and now she has to manage it and try to save it from bankruptcy with the other co-owner. Selena is also not impressed with her new co-owner and the inconvenience she brings, especially when it becomes impossible to deny their attraction. So those are my runner-up titles that I am excited to get to, and that's not even all the queer books out today. That's just a sampling.
But wait, there's more! We have more roundups today because I also have a little roundup for you. There's just so many books out today, and because this is how things go for me, I managed to pick two other books that I was going to talk about today that have since had their dates changed. So I'm going to do another little roundup for you of some things that are coming out that might interest you, starting with Malibu Rising by Taylor Jenkins Reid. Reid is the author of Daisy Jones and the Six, and also The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. This one is set in Malibu in 1983. It's about four famous siblings. They throw this epic party, and the book follows their lives for 24 hours. And during this time, old rivalries are reopened. There's jealousies, there's secrets. And by the morning after this party, their giant mansion has burned to the ground. That's not a spoiler. It's right in the description of the book. But you have to find out like what's going on and what happens to make that happen. So that one is Malibu Rising by Taylor Jenkins Reid. My next pick for this is The 100 Years of Lenny and Margot by Marianne Cronin. First of all, Marianne Cronin is like 23, 24. This is her first novel, and she got a film deal for this book before the book was even finished, which is just amazing. It is about a 17-year-old named Lenny who is terminally ill. She goes to live on the terminal ward at the Glasgow Princess Royal Hospital, and there she meets Margot, this 83-year-old woman who also lives in the ward and is just tons of fun and loves to wear purple, and they become best friends and have adventures. And it's going to break your heart and just make you feel so good. It is the 100 Years of Lenny and Margot. It's called 100 Years because their two ages combined together are 100 years of living. So there you have it. My next pick is a speculative historical fiction novel, if that is such a thing. It is The Thousand Crimes of Ming Su by Tom Lin. It takes place in the late 19th century about a Chinese-American assassin. Ming Su used to work on the Pacific Railroad, and it's where he met the love of his life. But then she is kidnapped by an evil railroad baron, and now he is on a mission to get his love back. He travels the country, occasionally carrying off jobs to get money and food, which, you know, as an assassin means killing people. And he joins up with a prophet and a supernatural circus. It's really fun. That one is The Thousand Crimes of Ming Su by Tom Lin. There's The Kissing Bug, a true story of a family, an insect, and a nation's neglect of a deadly disease by Daisy Hernandez. And this is Hernandez's look at her family. She had an aunt who passed away when she was young. Hernandez grew up in New Jersey in the 1980s, and she didn't really know what had happened to her aunt, but it turns out that she died of this disease that is called Chagas, and it's referred to as the kissing bug disease, and it's very prevalent in the United States and in Latin America, and it's not spoken about very often, but there's more cases of it in the United States than the Zika virus. And she talks about, you know, this devastating illness and how it affects people and the history of it in these countries. So that is The Kissing Bug by Daisy Hernandez. There's Future Feeling by Joss Lake, which, first of all, I'm pretty sure this is my favorite cover of the year. I would try to describe to you what it is, but I don't even really understand it myself still. It's just pink and shiny, and I want to live in it. But this is a sci-fi novel, which features several trans characters. The main character is Penfield R. Henderson, who is a dog walker who becomes obsessed with this other trans man who is a social media influencer. He thinks that this guy, Aiden, is just the best and the most amazing. And when he meets him, Aiden blows him off. It's just like, pah, whatever, and doesn't really talk to him. And so now Penfield is upset. And so he hires some people to put a curse on him, but instead accidentally curses a different young man. And so now he has to travel to another dimension in order to save this young man and take the curse off him. It sounds very strange. It is very strange. But, you know, I love another dimension story. It's really fun. So that is Future Feeling by Joss Lake. And my last pick is another fantastic and important book called How the Word is Passed, A Reckoning with the History of Slavery Across America by Clint Smith III, in which Smith, who is from New Orleans, talks about monuments and landmarks in the United States, both past and present, unfortunately, and tells the story of slavery in America and how it shaped the nation. It's a book that everyone should read. It is How the Word is Passed, A Reckoning with the History of Slavery Across America by Clint Smith III. And that's a lot of books for you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to our show notes, you can find all of the titles. If you're like, I didn't write those down fast enough, you can find all of the titles. We try not to give you too many titles every week, but, you know, there was just so many books today. We had to do it. It had to be done. So that is it for our new books. Danica, what are you going to read next?
I'm going to read Middletown by Sarah Moon, which is another queer YA book. This is about two sisters, one in middle school and one in high school, who are trying to find ways to stay together and out of foster care while their mom is in rehab. What are you going to read next?
I'm going to read Yerba Buena by Nina LaCour, which is LaCour's first adult novel coming out at the beginning of next year. You might know her YA fiction, like Watch Over Me and We Are Okay. And this is about two young women who fall in love and the story of how their relationship came to be. And that's it for today.
Whew, we did it.
A lot of books. We did it. Yes. Thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to our awesome audio editor, Jen Zink. You can drop us a line at allthebooks@bookriot.com. You can find us online. Danica hangs out on Twitter at Lesbray, L-E-S-B-R-A-R-Y. I mostly hang out on Instagram at FranzenComesAlive. If you want to give us a treat, you can go to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating or review. It helps other book lovers to find us. Thank you so much to all of you fabulous people out there who have done so recently and in the past. Thank you to everyone who has done it. It's such a great help to us. And as much as we would love to tell you about more books today, we just don't have the time. But you can read about more titles out now in the show notes at bookriot.com/allthebooks, as well as find a link to our weekly new books newsletter. And for more recs or general bookishness, check out bookriot.com. And don't forget to check out our full stable of podcasts at bookriot.com/listen, or just search Book Riot on your podcast player of choice. And in the meantime, happy reading!